This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Asif Manvi is a stage and film actor, a writer and teller of stories, and senior Muslim correspondent on The Daily Show. Born in India, raised in the UK, transplanted as a teenager to the Floridian paradise called Tampa, his background is so layered he calls himself a turducken. He's a purveyor of fake news, an advocate of real issues, a Muslim, but not, he says, the best example of one. Nevertheless, in an industry that hasn't very many, an example he must be. This week, I sat down with Asif for a live event at WNYC's Jerome L. Green Space. I began by asking about his influences, and he told me about being inspired early on by the Fonz.
I used to watch Happy Days when I was a kid, and I thought that acting was riding around in a motorcycle and a leather jacket in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I sort of emulated these sort of American TV characters and kind of wanted to do that. But then I got into theater. I ended up going to like a children's theater after school thing. And that was really where it all began.
You were a performer at Busch Gardens in Tampa.
Yes.
And when The Daily Show sent you to Tampa in advance of
yes.
the Republican National mm-hmm. Convention, you went and visited your old boss at Busch Gardens, and we have a clip of that.
You had this ability to talk on and on and on in this Arabic gibberish kind of nonsense language.
That wasn't gibberish, Alan. That was just the way I used to talk back then.
Oh.
What else do you remember?
I remember firing you.
Well, you don't seem upset about it.
If it was 25 years ago, then we moved on.
Yeah, I've moved on too, Alan, okay? I'm doing big things, you know? Played a lot of doctors and the occasional terrorist and deli owner.
Poor Alan. He was really excited to be on The Daily Show. And then we kind of ambushed him with this whole, like, you remember when you fired me kind of thing, which he didn't really remember. I had to remind him of because it was a big deal in my career and in my life. Like, I was devastated. It was my first real sort of acting job, and I got fired. It was because I had taken some medication. Right?
I always use that excuse when I'm fired.
I took some cold medicine, and was asleep in the break room and missed like a half a day's work, and so they fired me. But he had no recollection of that, and I had to remind him. But he was a lot of fun. He completely played along, and then I think at the end of it, he sort of might have been a little sorry that he did. Which
he must have known if he was a viewer of The Daily Show that he was going to end up.
Yeah, well, I think
like
he thought he was going to talk about, you know, me being a street performer at Busch Gardens, and all the Busch Gardens executives were there, you know, who are all his bosses and stuff. And then, like, I pull out, like, remember when you fired me, you ass? And so the poor guy was a little, I think he was a little thrown.
How much is ambushing a Daily Show strategy?
It's not really a strategy. I mean, there are two kinds of things that we do. We do sit-down interviews with people, and then we do a man-on-the-street stuff. And of course, with man-on-the-street stuff, there is an inherent sort of ambushing that happens where people are not expecting to be asked a question. In the interviews that we set up, there are sometimes, you know, things that people expect to be asked or they're going to talk about, and then there are, we might go off into an area where they don't expect to be asked those questions. And I guess that inherently is kind of an ambush situation. But that's kind of where you get the real stuff, the real moments. I think that we live in an age and a culture where everyone feels like they have something to say and a point of view and they need to get it out. And sometimes we're the only people that will talk to them. And they need to find an outlet. And then there's also something Stephen Colbert said to me when I first started on The Daily Show. They sent me to have a meeting with him and ask about doing field pieces. And he said to me, one of the things he said to me was, when you put a camera in somebody's face, they get a lobotomy. So remember that.
How did you get hooked up with The Daily Show?
It was really just an audition. And initially, I said no. Because, you know, I'd gone to these kinds of auditions before. The sort of, like, I'd gone down to Letterman and different things. And, like, you know, they basically just used to sort of be like, hey, can you put on this turban and sit on this carpet and pretend like you're flying for like a comedy bit that we're going to do? You know, so I thought, it's going to be one of these things. And so I said no. And then they called back 5 minutes later and they said, are you sure? They kind of want you to come down, and it's not for what you think it is. It's for a correspondent. And so I said, well, what time do they want me to come down? And they said, by 3. I said, oh, I'll be there at 3. I don't know why I had this attitude, but I kind of had this sort of like, Daily Show is beneath me. I've been on Broadway. You know what I mean?
You were in Oklahoma.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. So I was like, I've been in Oklahoma, Mr. Stewart. I don't know if you're aware of my resume. But I did. I went down and I met John. And, you know, I was a fan of the show. I used to watch it back then. Don't anymore. But now, no. But we just did this piece that they had written. And I didn't really know what I was doing. So I just figured I'll just do my best Stephen Colbert impression. So I did, and John turned to me and said, congratulations, welcome to the show. And I really thought he was kidding. I was like, what do you mean? And he said, well, you'll be on the show tonight. And he was like, do you have plans? And what's really bizarre about it is that I go into my first ever rehearsal, and it's usually just a couple of producers and some writers and stuff sitting there, and I'm rehearsing, and I look out, and there's a guy sitting there with a baseball cap on, and he's like, watching the rehearsal, and I sort of look closely and I realize that it's Bruce Springsteen. And I'm like, wow, Bruce Springsteen works at the Daily Show.
But then you get the job.
And
you were the senior Muslim correspondent,
yes.
The senior brown correspondent. It's not being on a carpet in a turban, but did it irk you at all?
It's a version of that, is what you're saying.
No, it's
yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's knowing.
No, you know, I think, I mean, we are ultimately, at the end of the day, sort of parodying the real news. So I was happy at that point, because initially I remember saying to John, like, do you want me to do an accent? And he was like, no, not at all. So I think I was in this place where I was like, just happy to like, not have to be like, did it me, you know, like that. And I could just be myself and sort of play, you know, an Indian American. So, yeah, I started out. And you know, still do a lot of the pieces that pertain to brown people. And brown people are in the news a lot, so it's good.
And yeah. And it's senior Muslim correspondent with a very sharp point. Mm. One of my favorites was after the home improvement store Lowe's pulled its ads from a show called All American Muslim, because just associating with anything Muslim was controversial. Mm-hmm. You reported on why Lowe's should shut down entirely.
Without the store Lowe's, the jihadist goal is unachievable, John. If you were a Muslim who wants to build a bomb, sorry, I'm obviously being redundant, but what would you build it out of?
I don't know how to build bombs. What, wiring? PVC pipe, fertilizer, I guess.
Yep. Or, as they call it here, aisle 5. John, Lowe's is to Muslims what FAO Schwartz is to 9-year-olds. Wait,
the Council on American Islamic Relations gave you a Courage in Media award.
Yeah.
The ACLU gave you a Social Responsibility in Media award. I mean, you use your powers for good.
I make funny faces. The CARE Award was really nice, although it was a little bit absurd, because I remember going out to the ceremony, and the guy that they were giving the award to before me was a Syrian pianist and composer whose parents had been beaten up by the Assad government, and they had death threats against him and all of this stuff, and they're showing a video of his work and his family, and it was a devastating story of real courage and standing up to a despot and all this stuff, and he gets the award, and then next it's me, and it's basically like, I'm like, you know, and they're showing clips of me doing pratfalls and making faces, and so it was a tough act to follow, you know?
But how important is Muslimness to your work?
I've spent more times in bars than in mosques, you know? So I'm a terrible sort of role model for anything Muslim. But culturally, I am Muslim. And I also recognize how few sort of faces there are of moderate Muslim American identity in today's media, on television, anywhere. So I recognize the need for that in our culture and in the media. So I don't think about it too much, my Muslimness. The sort of character that I play on The Daily Show what he means on a cultural level is beyond what I am. I mean, there was a period of time when I was doing a lot of pieces back to back that were all about like Islamophobia and Muslim stuff. And I remember saying to John actually in the hallway one time when I met him, I was like, I just need to do like a normal piece. Like one piece now where it does nothing to do with like being Muslim or anything like that. It started to sort of like get to me a little bit, you know. But for the most part, it's fascinating to me.
Haven't you ever had a moment where you just couldn't believe what the clueless guest was saying?
Yeah, that is one of the perks / depressing things about being a Daily Show correspondent.
That woman in Tennessee?
Yeah.
She's opposing this mosque being built in Tennessee. And then she goes on to say everything she knows about Muslims, culminating with the fact that a third of all Muslims are terrorists.
You do know I'm Muslim, right?
Nobody's perfect.
You know, that moment when she says nobody's perfect is such a classic sort of Daily Show experience, because that wasn't her initial answer. Her initial answer was something much more diplomatic, like, well, I assume that perhaps you were, da-da-da, you know. Then we had to stop and change tape, and her husband, who was sitting off to the side, who sort of fancied himself as a stand-up comic, said, you know, honey, you know what you should say when he asks you that question about being Muslim? You should say, hey, nobody's perfect. Right? Huh? Huh? And she actually was like, oh, can I redo that?
So as a fake journalist doing fake news, do you feel any sense of journalistic responsibility?
None. I mean, other than the fact that we are dealing with real stories and real news items, in that way, we want to tell the story. But, you know, our currency is ultimately comedy, and we sort of look for the hypocrisy. We look for where the laughs are.
Okay, so let's see. I took a little inventory. You were a doctor in The Dictator.
Wow.
You were a doctor on CSI.
Yes.
You were a doctor on Oz.
Yes.
And on The Sopranos.
Yes.
And on the TV series Jericho.
Yes.
And in the Ricky Gervais film Ghost Town. You were a terrorist in Sleeper Cell, and right. That was very scary.
Welcome to Hollywood, folks. This is what it is to be a brown guy in Hollywood. I used to play cab drivers when I was starting out, and then I sort of...
You were promoted.
To doctor, and then I got promoted to terrorist, you know? I actually even played a doctor on a soap opera, where they just couldn't be bothered with a name, so they were like, why don't we just call you Dr. Manvi? And I was like, okay. And so literally in the soap opera, you hear like, paging Dr. Manvi. Paging that, and you know, my mother was very proud.
Was she? But in June, there's a new Owen Wilson, Vince Vaughn musical called The Internship that hits screens. They play interns at Google. And your character is running the internship.
Right.
You're a taskmaster.
Mm-hmm.
You have a thick Indian accent.
Well, not so thick, but all right.
Does it bother you at all that they ask for the accent?
Initially, I was like, I'm not doing the accent. And then they were like, here's how much money you'll make. No. I was like, I will do the accent. But honestly, I often feel like with that sort of situation that it's really about the writing and it's really where the comedy comes from. If the comedy is about the accent, then I have a problem with it. But what makes him funny is not his accent.
In 1998, you created a one-man show called Sakina's Restaurant, out of which grew the film, which is incredibly sweet, called Today's Special, which is
you.
A romantic comedy about a prodigal son. He's a young chef who cooks by the book, but he learns how to trust himself, improvise, embrace life, and even please his dad.
Yeah, yeah. They were all characters sort of based on my family. And we developed this one-person show. And I didn't know where to set it. I thought, well, I'll set it in a restaurant because it's a very easy access point for most Americans. And then when we made the movie, we took the restaurant element and really used food as a metaphor of transformation and culture. And for me, the movie is really about the integration of identity, you know, and the idea that the lead character can never really be himself until he has reconciled his immigrant identity and where he comes from with where he is today and ultimately becomes whole.
And you got raves for your performance in Disgraced. It ran on Broadway until very recently. It's a story about how to make it in America, and it could have fit into any era, really. In the case of your character, he rejects the Muslim faith he was born into. He gives himself up voluntarily for searches at the airport. He's a successful mergers and acquisitions lawyer. What drew you to that? Is it that theme of integration, which the character in your film handles more successfully than the character in Disgrace?
Well, the character in today's special is dealing with some of the very same issues, but we just come at it from a comedic tone. And in Disgrace, Ayad Akhtar, who wrote the play, a brilliant writer, who sent me the script about 2 years ago, and it was one of the bravest plays I'd ever read. And when we did it at Lincoln Center, you know, it was really interesting. The beauty of plays is that you start to understand, especially a new play, you start to understand what the play is over the course of time as different audiences come and see it. And, you know, it really is about a Muslim American man who is struggling with his identity, and it ends in a very sad, devastating place. But how many people actually sort of identified with that character, you know, and identified with his struggle, that when push comes to shove, however much we want to talk about United Colors of Benetton, we end up gravitating towards these very base tribal identities that we have. And whether you had Muslims or Jews or African Americans or whoever, like, come see this play, they recognize something about themselves.
Tell me about how, for many years, Omar Sharif haunted your life.
You know, it's funny because we finish where we start, which is basically that these American iconic characters that I used to watch, you know, like the Fonz and stuff like that. And then one day I saw this actor, Omar Sharif, in Dr. Zhivago. And at that time, he was the only sort of non-Caucasian heroic figure that you could find in Hollywood movies, you know. He and Sidney Poitier, that was it. I met him as a waiter at a restaurant. I said, you know, Dr. Zhivago changed my life. And he turned to me and he said, oh, really? Mine too.
Is it true, you know, you've raised Jon Stewart, that absolute power corrupts absolutely?
Are you saying that's that about Jon Stewart? I can't answer that. He's awesome. He's a benevolent dictator.
Thank you again much.
Thank you very much.
Of course, this was just part of a much longer conversation with Asif. To watch the whole video, go to our website, onthemedia.org. By the way, you're listening to music from his film, Today's Special.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, Alex Goldman, PJ Vogt, Sara Abdurrahman, and Chris Neary. We had more help from Krista Ripple, our intern, who, we're sorry to say, is leaving this week. She was fantastic and was a big part in the piece on the White House. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Rob Frankel.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. And our boss, bassist-composer Ben Allison, wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Jane Marcher Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR. Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.